Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about David Tui's 2000 film, or I guess film from the year 2000, Pitch Black. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Dude, she drives me crazy, and I can't help myself.
Wait, give me half a second to remember the name of that band. It starts with an N. The New Radicals, yes?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, bummer.
Fine Young Cannibals.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, the New Radicals did that. You got the music in you. Don't
lurk. Lead singer for Fine Young Cannibals looks like a young Colin Powell. For those of you keeping score at home.
There we go. That's the kind of banter that you're going to hear on the Not Just New Movies podcast. Though, for those of you joining us,
you're just tuning in for episode 52.
Yes, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section, where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So as is our recent pattern, I will be handling the character name game since you've created, what is it called? Up Your Specs, yes?
It's Know Your Specs, legitimately, but, you know, in our circle of podcasters, it's Up Your Specs.
Okay.
So if you're being aggressive.
Right. We'll do that a little bit later, but in the meantime, I'll give you a character's name, and then we'll return at the very end. You'll have to guess which movie this character is from. So, also, I should mention, keeping in mind, of course, that this character has to have some sort of loose connection to a movie that came out this past weekend in wide release. So, the character for this week is Pepper Brooks. Brooks. So think about that.
Ben, you remember when I got it in one guess last week?
I was wondering if that was going to be too easy 2 weeks in a row for you, but we'll figure it out. We'll get to that. So let's go ahead and move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool things we've been reading, cool events we've been able to go to. Tyler, let's start with you. What have you been consuming recently?
Oh, man, I've been consuming quite a lot.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. I got a couple things on my list.
All right, let's hear.
One of them that I want to bring up is this cartoon that I watched, and I think I've mentioned it before, Brave and the Bold.
Yeah.
It's a Batman Brave and the Bold, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I watched a repeat of it, but it was one I hadn't seen this past weekend.
Okay.
And it was the best, I'm going to say the top two best, it's in the top two list for best episode in the series.
Okay.
There's been a couple good ones. One of them was Bat Mite's Misadventures or something along those lines, where he told stories about Batman from like the different universes of Batman. So like one was like Japanese manga.
Okay.
And one was like a Scooby-Doo adventure when he used to come on the old Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Okay.
But this one actually featured Superman. It was called, I think it was, I wish I had all this information at my disposal, but like Dueling Superheroes or Fighting Superheroes or Attacking Superheroes was the name of the episode.
Okay.
And it was like a classic 1940s Fleischer cartoon, one of those old Superman cartoons. But like it had like a... like a comedy about it where Lois was kind of trying to trick Superman into marrying her, and Superman had this like 1940s voice, booming voice, but he would like crack wise or say something funny, and for some reason Batman showed up out of nowhere. And if you're a fan of Superman and Batman, I'm sure you are if you're listening to this, because we talk about them all the time, but check out this episode. It was just like, it was legitimately funny, and it was like fun to watch. It was only like 23 minutes or something.
Do you know if people can find this stuff online anywhere, or is it only?
Yeah, I wanted to say something, but I don't know. It might be available like on Cartoon Network's website. I know I've seen episodes, full episodes on there before.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I've gone there before and they've taken episodes down. Like they may just show last week's episode.
Right.
Or something like that. So maybe if you catch it within this next week, you'll be able to watch it. But yeah, I think that's kind of the best starting point. I mean, just type in something into Google, watch free torrent or something. I'm not condoning that type of action, but I will give you keywords to make your way to that.
No, just to be 100% clear, we do not condone.
Do not endorse illegal use of the internet.
If for no other reason than just to, like, prevent.
But if they don't make it available, I mean, what else are we supposed to do? Seriously.
Buy a DVD box set.
Yeah, buy the box set then.
I'm
going to fall in line with corporate America here and say buy the box set. I mean, you won't regret it. It's a good show. I don't know what season this is. It's like 3 or 4.
Wow, you are wildly unprepared for this segment.
Hey, I'm not a nerd, dude. I don't know all the specs about this one episode. Anyway, moving on. There's this new show on Adult Swim featuring comedian Paul Scheer. I don't know if you've heard of this, if you've heard, watched this. NTSF SDSUV.
I actually saw a billboard for this the other day and thought it looked kind of awesome. What is it exactly?
It's basically a ploy of CSI or NCIS shows. Just like... what was that other Chris Elliott show that I had mentioned before?
Oh, Eagle Heart or something?
Oh, Eagle Heart, yeah. That's like a play on Walker, Texas Ranger. Like, NTSF SDSUV is it's a play on the CSI formula where Paul Scheer plays like a Horatio Caine, and there's a team of cops, and it's only like 15 minutes. I watched one episode this week, and actually it features Star Trek captain from Star Trek Voyager. I don't know if anyone would know who I'm talking about, but
okay.
But
that's all right.
National Terrorism Strike Force San Diego Sport Utility Vehicle. So it comes right after Children's Hospital, which is also a pretty good show. So if you want to like record that half hour block on Thursday nights,
okay,
on a swim, feel free.
Nice.
Also, talking about superheroes, the series 52, the comic book series, have you read this, Ben? Have you seen this?
I have not read it. I remember you reading it back in the day. I was actually, when I was creating the file name for this podcast, I noticed that it was our 52nd episode, and that was actually, I kid you not, that was the first thing I thought of, was I wonder if Tyler is going to make some sort of reference to that based on how into that whole comic series you were back in the day.
Like, I didn't really get into comic books until circa 2006, and that's a whole story on its own. But when I started reading, I read Infinite Crisis, which was this Geoff Johns mega series. Not really. It was like 7 issues. And it played off of the maxi series back from 1985, Crisis on Infinite Earths, which turned out to be awesome as well. And 52 was a series of 52 issues that came out weekly. That happened after Infinite Crisis. Like, it was this huge event in the DC universe, and then they came out with comics that said 1 year later. So when you were buying comics, you were like, 1 year later, like a year has gone by between issue like whatever 13 and 14, and 52 was the series of events that was happening between issues.
Yeah, in that year, in that lost year.
Weird to have like comics come out 1 year later and then you keeping up weekly with what was going on between that year.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember it being like a huge deal, like, you know, because it spanned so many titles and stuff too. Right. There's a lot of tie-ins and things.
Yeah, it was, there was like, it had like its own cast of characters and like Booster Gold and, the Elongated Man, Animal Man.
Okay, so you're talking F Team here, not even.
Yeah, we could say that.
Okay.
It was authored by Geoff Johns, Grant Morrison, Mark Waid, and Greg Rucka. You may recognize.
Yeah, those are some. I mean, if you get the chance in the comic world.
Yeah, if you get the chance, I think it's separated into, let's say, four volumes. I'm going to put it each at like $30 each. So if you got, you know, money to burn, check it out. I would check out Infinite Crisis first just to see what was going on before you jump into 52, because they're continuously referencing events.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to lie, right after 52 ended was kind of when DC started going down for me.
Yeah.
like stuff started happening. They tried to top themselves. Now they're doing this whole reboot thing. Of course, the reboot's the bad word in September. But yeah, it was a really great series that dealt with those F-cast characters, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
And Final Crisis was utter shit, so just kind of stop reading with 52.
Okay.
Move your way backwards.
So when you're talking about the DC Universe kind of going downhill and taking a dive for you afterwards, did
Well, for me personally, I'm not
right.
saying...
Right. Yeah, just for you. But did the end of 52 begin that downward trend, or were you happy with that series as a whole?
It explained a lot of the unexplained that happened in Infinite Crisis.
Okay.
So, like, all these changes that occurred and all these characters had changed, and 52 was basically explaining why all these changes were happening.
Okay.
Kind of like, oh, well, that makes sense. And it was almost like, there were so many storylines going across each other, and 52 kind of kept solid as far as keeping hold of what storylines were happening at what time,
mm-hmm.
and they, would cross over with each other and whatnot.
Right.
And of course, it spanned all these miniseries and stuff, but
okay.
Again, the downfall.
So the only reason that you're bringing this up is because this is our 52nd episode, yes?
And it's a good series. Yeah.
Okay, all right. I mean, did you revisit it recently, or were you just reminded? Okay.
Yeah, I was reminded of 52 that it was good. I'm not going to...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a huge undertaking to go back and reread 52.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I
could be unemployed and...
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No.
Anything else you've been consuming?
The last thing I wanted to bring up, and this concerns you, Ben.
Okay.
Our podcast recently popped up on earwolf.com. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They come out with podcasts. And I'm not going to say they welcomed us in with open arms. I mean, we paid them to post our picture.
Yep.
But Earwolf, if any of you are coming from the Earwolf site, welcome, first of all.
Yep.
I kind of wanted to give a few thoughts on people if they've never been to Earwolf or listened to any of their podcasts to check them out. One that I really enjoyed is Sklarbro Country. I recently got into it. It features the Sklar brothers. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, Ben.
Yeah, they've been on the I Love the series of things.
Oh, that's a common misconception. I don't think they ever did those.
What?
Yeah, they've claimed that everyone thinks they're from then. Although I'm pretty sure I saw them on there.
I'm almost certain I did.
But, yeah, but I think they say they never did the I Love the 80s, but I'd have to disagree. They might have done I Love the 90s or something.
Okay.
But yeah, earwolf.com, we're waiting for a check, maybe an invite to join the official family. But until then, I guess I'll be pretty happy with any of the listeners that stumble across us. Give us a positive or negative review in iTunes. Give us a rating. Send us in emails. We just discuss movies, man.
Yeah, let us know what you think if you guys are joining from the Earwolf community. So,
really like our show, send Earwolf an email about how good our show is. Maybe we can start making some scratch around here.
Yeah, that's the ultimate end game, is it not?
I don't know about you, Ben, but I'm gnawing off my own leg as we speak. I'm so
Oh, man, that reminds me of, like, a Charles Dickens book or something. That just seems dark.
That is dark. All right, I'm done.
Good stuff. That was a lot of media that you'd been consuming. You were not lying.
Some Earwolf stuff. No, that's not too bad.
Yeah. All right, well, I've got a couple things I wanted to mention. First of all, I saw...
So much, dude.
What?
So much stuff, dude.
Yeah, I know. First of all, a movie called The Apartment. Have you ever seen this or heard of this, Tyler?
I have heard of The Apartment. Is it a Japanese film?
It is not, actually.
An erotic voyeur film?
No.
Oh, no. Then I'm unfamiliar with this version.
No, this movie actually was nominated for 10 Academy Awards and won Best Picture in 1960. It stars Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine along with Fred McMurray. It has nothing to do with Japanese people or voyeuristic tendencies. Oh, amazing. All right. This movie actually was written and directed by Billy Wilder. I think he actually maybe co-wrote it or something. But if you guys have never, if you're listening to this podcast and you've never seen a Billy Wilder movie, go check out Some Like It Hot. Go check out Double Indemnity. Some of his good stuff. These are old movies, obviously, but these are really good stuff. This is really good stuff, I should say. But anyway, The Apartment I'd never seen before. I don't know that I've seen a Shirley MacLaine movie maybe ever, and Jack Lemmon certainly not like one of my top actors, just because obviously in the time which we grew up, he was much older and making movies that were kind of wildly outside of our age range. But this movie is really fantastic, and I would recommend that everybody check it out. I got it through Netflix, I think, on the disc. So, unfortunately it's not streaming right now. So until that bump in price that you and Kate and Allison spoke about a few weeks ago actually takes effect, I would recommend that people throw this in your DVD queue if you're getting ready to ditch your DVD section of Netflix. But in any case, I thought that this was a comedy for some reason, and it is to some degree, but it's actually much more of a drama. The story is about Jack Lemmon's character, who kind of works for this big insurance company in New York, and he actually rents out his apartment to a bunch of like kind of corporate overlords at this company. So they're all married, and so they can basically just bang random chicks in his apartment, and he does it to kind of move up the corporate ladder. So he, you know, at one point he gets sick early in the movie, and somebody calls and says, like, well, now, Baxter, that's his name, is the character's name, you promised that I had Thursday night, whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's very, like, and he's like, you got to be kidding me. And they're like, well, Baxter, we could send you back down to the mailroom. And it's stuff. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but
so I need to bang this dame.
Yeah, it's very cool and kind of a 60s dialogue, obviously. But Shirley MacLaine, man, I just wanted to mention, she is a force to be reckoned with in this movie. I did not really expect her to kind of deliver this powerhouse performance like she did. And the movie definitely takes a turn about halfway through and gets really freaking serious real quick. So I just have to say that I really enjoyed this. What's that?
Hippies.
No, I don't really think hippies has anything to do with it.
No, I was trying to guess the serious.
They come across a roving band of hippies
that try to get into their apartment. There's like an epic battle at the end.
That actually sounds like a pretty awesome movie on its own, but unfortunately that doesn't happen here. But I don't want to give away what happens, because I went into this movie knowing almost nothing about it, and I think other people would benefit from doing the same thing, and just kind of let this whole thing make an kind of an impact if you can. Ray Walston is also in it. He was the dude who played Mr. Hand in what am I looking for? Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You know what I'm talking about, Tyler? The kind of
teacher guy
who's like a total douche. So it was
he orders a pizza in class. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it took me a second to realize that's who that was. But anyway, The Apartment, 1960. I mean, it won Best Picture, so that should give you some sort of scale, I guess, some sort of positioning on your own personal scale if you want to go back through the old Best Picture winners or whatever. I had no idea that it won Best Picture until I looked it up afterwards, and I was like, oh, okay, all right then.
Have you seen Some Like It Hot?
I haven't. I really like that one too.
Marilyn Monroe and Jack Lemmon.
Yeah, and you
that
know,
movie's awesome.
It is. It's great. And Marilyn Monroe is somebody that is such like a pop culture kind of, you know, phenomenon, I guess, like this really like huge iconic force. And I had never really, I think Some Like It Hot was the first movie that I ever saw that had Marilyn Monroe in it. And I only saw that movie for the first time a few months ago. So,
wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm as shocked.
Never seen a 7 Year Itch?
No, I still have.
Or Gentlemen Prefer Blondes?
I have not. That is actually in my queue right now. I've not been able to check it off the list. But
okay, I've got two. For some reason, I have two pictures of Marilyn Monroe up in my living room.
Okay.
By no choice of my own, they just appeared there. like I'll put a poster up, and it was right next to my Marilyn Monroe like free photo frame. Like I bought a frame and a picture of her was in it, so I just put it up on my wall, and then
Yeah.
Lo and behold, now I have two pictures of Monroe.
And then, yeah, and then your poster of Lionheart, the Van Damme movie, somehow by the ghost of Marilyn Monroe has just been turned into another picture of her.
Yeah, it's just her and the wife beater with like the sweating biceps.
That's
hauntingly beautiful.
That's disturbing. But yeah, since you mentioned Some Like It Hot, I would definitely recommend that one too. Apparently, I'm looking this up right now, apparently in the year 2000, the American Film Institute listed Some Like It Hot as the greatest American comedy film of all time. So that's,
I can agree with that.
That's a pretty high praise. But it's probably...
Suck It, American Pie series.
So both The Apartment and Some Like It Hot are Billy Wilder films that I cannot recommend highly enough. So the other thing that I wanted to mention is this today and yesterday I had the chance to attend the ABC press tour for the Television Critics Association. So these are a group of critics who write about TV, sits in the Beverly Hilton in Beverly Hills and just listens to panel after panel. It's like a mini Comic-Con, I guess, just for upcoming television shows for the different networks.
Nice.
So,
okay, one question up front.
Yes.
Did you get to see the cast of Happy Endings?
I did, yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Number two.
Yes.
Did you tell everybody it was you that ended No Ordinary Family's run on ABC?
I did not mention that.
You pissed off. This guy pissed off.
Michael Chiklis.
Michael Chiklis so much that the show ended in cancellation.
Yeah, for those...
That may be false.
You guys can go through our back episodes and listen to the chronicling of Chiklis Gate for more information on that. But and just as a real quick aside, I finished the first season of The Shield, Tyler, and I really like it a lot. So I'm going to have to come back
Vic
to...
Mackey.
I'm going to have to come back to Michael Chiklis with hat in hand and apologize to him at some point.
Gee, Mr. Chiklis, I'm so sorry I trash-talked your family show.
But, okay, so I just wanted to run through just a couple of the shows that were presented by ABC at this thing that are going to be coming on sometime soon in the next month or two, like for the fall season, and just give some really, really brief thoughts on them. Pan Am, if you've been to a movie in a theater recently, I'm sure you've seen the kind of...
20.
Yeah, exactly. What used to be called the 20, it's basically just like the pre-roll footage for... right after the trivia, but before the movie actually begins. They show all the...
Before the dentist advertisements.
They show all of the, kind of like behind-the-scenes looks at upcoming stuff or whatnot. So Pan Am has been one of those. It stars Christina Ricci and Mike Vogel, who actually was up for the role of Captain America at one point, and a bunch of other people. This show, ABC in general, is geared towards women predominantly. What's that?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Desperate Housewives, Lost was kind of the exception to that rule, I think, where it hit more of the kind of four-quadrant target, I guess, that they were looking for. But predominantly, yeah, it's been known as like a women-centric network. Pan Am, surprisingly, after seeing a little bit more of the footage that they kind of premiered there or whatever, this little sizzle reel, and then hearing the cast and everybody talk about it, I think that's one that I'm actually going to give a chance. You know, coming off of Mad Men and stuff like that, and you see that Pan Am is set in the 60s and it's got this whole jet age thing going and it looks very similar stylistically to Mad Men, you're kind of like, my first thought anyway, being cynical, was like, this is just a blatant cash-in on what is, you know, what Mad Men is doing well right now with this whole stylistic thing. And then I saw the trailer for that show called The Playboy Club on NBC. Have you seen that trailer, Tyler? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
That one looks even more like a blatant ripoff of Mad Men, like nice. So much so that it's almost insulting. But anyway, getting back to Pan Am, this one...
Insulting.
It actually is kind of cool because Pan Am as an airline did not fly within the United States. So I think that's accurate. Don't hold me to that. But I'm pretty sure for a period of years they were known as one of the main airlines to fly, you know, internationally, I guess. So this show is going to be hitting a lot of big cities and stuff like that, not necessarily in the actual production, but the characters are going to be visiting these fictional, you know, renderings of these cities. I don't want to imply that they're shooting on a global scale because that's not accurate, but anyway, it looks pretty good. It looks not only like oh, we're a bunch of girl, you know, stewardesses, flight attendants who are having fun and whatever. There's also this element of like espionage and stuff thrown in there where people kind of pass things off to them because they have kind of unprecedented access to travel the world where, at a time when that wasn't really as common, I guess, as it is today. So Pan Am looks like, you know, could be decent. I'll probably report back at some point. And kind of just let people know what I think about it later on. Charlie's Angels, they're rebooting Charlie's Angels, and Alfred Goh and Miles Miller, who are the guys who brought Smallville to the small screen, are kind of the showrunners for this one. And a girl named Rachel Taylor, who's the Australian chick in the first Transformers movie, if you guys remember that one, and Minka Kelly, who's on Friday Night Lights, are two of the three angels, and the show looks pretty iffy, I'm not going to lie. I mean, the girls obviously are, like, super attractive, and, one of the big things that ABC is trying to do is do this whole, like, empowered women thing, obviously, considering that's who they're kind of...
But they're Charlie's Angels. Come on.
Right. But, and, you know, it does look like they're kicking more ass than usual and stuff. I'm not going to pretend to have seen the old show or even any of the recent, you know, movies in their entirety.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen clips of them. But Drew Barrymore apparently has her hands in this program as far as, like, approving scripts and stuff. Like, her production company is kind of involved with the making. So if you guys liked those old incarnations, this one's supposed to be kind of, you know, as you would expect, a more modern, kind of sleek, whatever, more badass version. So
I just want to see girls fighting, beach scenes, some music,
yep,
and a well presented ending.
Yeah, all of that I think will.
And Tom Selleck.
The Tom Selleck thing probably just put you over the edge there.
Not watching it.
The rest of it I think probably will be okay. And then one other one that I wanted to mention really quickly is called Once Upon a Time. This is like a big storybook type of thing that honestly feels like a direct ripoff of Fables, which is, you know, something that Tyler and I have talked about, I feel like, countless times.
What's they probably invented?
It's probably only been a couple times on this podcast before. Really fantastic comic series by Bill Willingham. If you guys are into the same type of things that Tyler and I are, definitely check that out. It's worth reading, especially if you haven't gotten into comics recently or are, you know, kind of actively against it. I think reading Fables will change your mind on that. Once Upon a Time takes Jennifer Goodwin and Jennifer Morrison, who actually is like the main character in the show. She was Ted's girlfriend on How I Met Your Mother in this most recent season. Tyler, do you know?
Oh, the one that did all the...
the Arcadian stuff?
Yeah, yeah, the Arcadian protests.
Yeah, that whole disaster.
Ooh, I like her.
Yeah, she could be okay.
Tune in.
In this. And it might be worth, like, checking out for a couple episodes or something. I just don't know if the show is going to have the staying power that they're hoping. It's actually brought to us by a couple of the exec producers and writers of Lost, but I don't think that success is going to translate very well. It's basically a girl finds out that this town of Storybrook has been like kind of frozen in place for 28 years, and a bunch of like fairy tale characters have been kind of implanted there. And then the series kind of bounces back and forth between this kind of real world setting to the actual Once Upon a Time-esque world, you know, this fantasy world of like castles and dragons and all that kind of stuff. So
is John Larroquette in this?
John Larroquette is not in that. Are you referencing the Tenth Kingdom?
I am indeed referencing the Tenth Kingdom, because that sounds almost exactly like what happened in the Tenth Kingdom.
Yeah,
and Fables is, if you look at Tenth Kingdom and Fables, you would say, yeah, Fables probably could have taken a few things from the Tenth Kingdom.
Yeah, and you actually wrote a review of the Tenth Kingdom for notjustthemovies.com once, didn't you?
I did. It's mediocre, like the writing. So don't judge me, because I've gotten a lot better. So I think I wrote that in like 2007.
Okay, fair enough.
And I was really excited about writing it. So
yeah,
maybe punctuation errors. I really like John Larroquette. No. They should make a sequel to this.
9 exclamation points in a row is probably a bit excessive, but
yeah.
So I don't know. It sounds like it has some potential, but at the same time, I don't get a good feeling about this one. I'll probably try to watch a couple episodes of it and again try to report back. But I just wanted to
yeah, I'll probably watch that one.
Kind of report a little bit of some of the stuff that I saw. Tim Allen has also got a new show. He's coming back finally from Home Improvement. Yeah, exactly. This show is called Last Man Standing, and like a lot of other shows on ABC's slate this year, it's about one man kind of outnumbered by women, I guess, in the home and kind of trying to figure out his place in the world and stuff. It was kind of cool to hear Tim Allen talk about what he was going to be doing in the show as far as the way of translating his comedy, because with Home Improvement, you had Tool Time, right, which was his time to kind of address the audience, if you will, and kind of get a little bit of his stand-up stuff in there as opposed to the storylines around the house with Jill and the kids and everything, where that was much more, much more scripted and kind of formulaic sitcom stuff. Here, apparently, Tim Allen is going to be addressing like a webcam, just doing like videos, I guess, like talking about what it is to be a man or something. So that'll be his outlet, I guess, for getting that kind of manliness out there and his comedy and stuff, being able to kind of directly address the audience in a similar fashion to Tool Time. So
Tim Allen is by far one of the funniest guys I've ever seen on television.
Yeah,
I dig a lot of his movies too.
Yeah, Home Improvement's fantastic. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Santa Claus, to be honest with you.
Oh yeah,
the first one.
That is a Christmas classic.
Yeah, I really liked that movie, you know, as a kid, and I think it holds up pretty well. So
what's his name? The Peter Boyle is the boss.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like all these just kind of funny people in the, like the psychologist dad.
Yeah,
but yeah. Like Tool Time, or I always call Home Improvement Tool Time, but Home Improvement was that was like a show like I would watch every week.
Yeah.
As a hyperactive kid who couldn't sit down.
Right.
Like it was like Tool Time. Like, I would sit down and watch that.
Yeah, it was a great show. It was fantastic.
So the later seasons, kind of here and there, although Heidi was worth coming back for.
Indeed.
You know what I mean.
As she always is. All right, that's about all I wanted to mention for the Media Consume section. Let's go ahead and move on into our review of Pitch Black.
They say most of your brain shuts down in cryosleep, all but the animal side. Guess that's why I'm still awake.
If the man is gone, he's gone. Why should he bother us?
Maybe to take what you got. Maybe to work your nerves.
Is he really that dangerous?
Only around humans.
Jake! All right, so Pitch Black was released in the year 2000. It was directed by a guy named David Tui, who I should mention before I forget, I think wrote and directed. Let me check that, but definitely directed.
You forgot already. He's so forgettable.
he wrote and directed a movie called The Perfect Getaway that came out in 2009. This is a really good movie. If you guys have never seen this, check it out. It's kind of a smaller film, but it's really interesting. It's kind of a murder mystery, and they do Tui in particular does a really good job of pacing it and kind of releasing information to you bit by bit. Really good stuff. So I just wanted to kind of give a shout out.
Oh, is that the
Timothy Oliphant, Steve Zahn?
Yeah, Steve Zahn. The one I guessed the ending to before we walked in to watch it.
I don't recall.
I was like, Steve Zahn. Isn't it? No, I'm sorry. I caught myself. I didn't want to spoil the movie.
Okay. All right.
But basically, I called the ending.
Okay. Well, yeah, I would still recommend checking that out.
Yeah, I remember that now. I didn't remember it until just now.
Right.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
So, Tyler, what did you think about Pitch Black?
Pitch Black was fairly enjoyable. A good sci-fi movie. I liked Vin Diesel's smoldering character in this, although his acting is Vin Diesel-esque.
Yeah.
He set the archetype, I'm sure, for the 2000s man actor of like saying very little, but when you do say something, like, you have to wink at the camera.
Okay.
And be like, yeah, I'm a badass. What's up?
Yeah.
But it was one of those movies that I like because it had a small cast and it had that isolationist feel to it, kind of suspenseful at times, like, you know, they don't know where they are, they don't know what's going on, and that's just good science fiction right there, where, you know, like, it's almost, and it reminded me of a few science fiction, or a specific science fiction story that I'll bring up in a second, but I thought it was well made. I mean, the CG graphics, you can't really complain about. It was 2000, we can't compare it to, you know, nowadays.
Yeah.
But overall, pretty fun watch.
Okay. I was not quite as hyped on it as you are. I'm going to be honest. I fell asleep near the end.
I fell asleep too, but I went back. But
I just wasn't that into it. I think it's a nice, like, small – I don't know what the budget is. I'm going to see if I can find out. It might actually be listed here.
Yeah, it felt like a small film because they stayed in, like, the same location.
Right.
Like, it was either the spaceship or the camp.
Yeah.
And that, like, they were traveling between the two.
Yeah, it says here the budget was $23 million, and that actually sounds about right. Putting that into perspective, District 9 actually cost $30 million to make. So for the effects and stuff, I think you're right. You know, it kind of was reminiscent. There I go again, saying reminiscent about something that came after it. Firefly, the
TV
series. That's
a complete misuse of the word.
I know. The TV series Firefly and the following movie, Serenity. The effects I thought were kind of on par with that, even though, like you just mentioned, those things came a little bit after. But, like, the ship crash in the beginning looked pretty freaking cool, you know? Like, there's some good stuff in here. And as you said, it is kind of a sci-fi thing. I would almost, like, liken it more to a horror movie than a sci-fi movie, though. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it does have that genre attached to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely anything that kind of sparks a jump at any point in time, mm-hmm. I guess, could be considered a horror. You know, like Alien, where it's a sci-fi, but it's still, if you look at it, it's kind of a horror because,
sure,
you know, they're dealing with the unknown and there's something out to get them and mm-hmm. all this stuff. You know, Jason X, I believe, took place in space, could be considered a horror / sci-fi adventure. I mean, I could go on for a while.
Right, yeah.
It's a good link. It's a good genre to mix together, seriously.
No, it definitely is.
Horror and science fiction is a good mix.
And,
like,
and
you can't have like a Dune every time, like straight science fiction.
Yeah, and a lot of movies have done that, have mixed those two genres to varying levels of success. What were the ones that you were going to mention that you said that kind of that you alluded to earlier?
Oh, you mean the science fiction story?
Yeah, didn't you say that you know, that Pitch Black kind of reminded you of other science fiction stories? Or
oh, well, yeah, well, it was a specific short story by Isaac Asimov, which I believe was behind the short story that inspired iRobot.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then I want to come back to that because I want to look up like the exact information. But there was this other game from 1995. It was a LucasArts game called The Dig.
Okay.
And I remember briefly playing it back in the 90s, and it kind of had, like, there was a lot of games around that time, late 90s, that dealt with, like, isolation. Like, you are this character on this planet, and there's nothing around you, and you have to, like, explore and walk around and find items of this, like, lost space camp
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. And so it kind of, I guess it was fun for me to watch because I had played some of those games. And The Dig I never really played, but it was kind of a fairly popular one. It was actually based off a Spielberg script or story from one of his TV shows.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, like the kind of the themes of that isolation in a science fiction setting, like on a planet,
yeah,
is one that I really enjoy, like, talking about and create stories around, because it, like, that's what it's like for us still. Like, space is this unexplored void of danger, basically. Like, if you're out there, you're gonna die, basically. So
stay on Earth.
Stay on Earth. or you die. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the movie for me just didn't really, I don't know, it presented all those things that you're mentioning, but it didn't do it in like a satisfying way for me. I think like the concept of it is kind of cool. You know, you're trapped on the island, if you will, the planet, with a convicted killer, and because he's got this kind of borderline superpower where he can see in the dark, because of like circumstances that roll around in the movie, an eclipse happens, just so happens to go down right while they're there, and they kind of have to rely on him, and you never really can tell, because Riddick's background is so shaded, you don't really know if he's ever going to turn on you at any second. You know, you don't know if he's out for himself the whole time, or if he's maybe even been rehabilitated to some degree, or like what the extent of his villainy is, I guess, which is kind of a cool tension builder, I guess, for the entire movie, because you're really not sure what he's going to do. He is like the kind of ultimate wild card, I guess.
Yeah, and then you have this guy who you think is like a cop or slash good guy, and then he turns out to be worse than Riddick, you know, with his morphine addiction and his, you know, he's like telling Riddick to kill one of the passengers at one point.
Yeah.
Like, because he or she was challenging his authority.
Right, yeah, that guy.
I guess we're in spoiler territory.
Right, yeah, of course.
It was the Captain Fry.
Yeah, I thought that guy was like a Michael Rapaport lookalike, and then I thought for a second it might be Patrick Wilson, but it's actually a guy named Cole Hauser, who...
I recognize neither of those actors that you mentioned.
Who has been in... I'm looking at his filmography, and it's not looking good. Tears of the Sun.
Did an episode of Felicity.
He was actually in Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, nice. Reunited. Oh, wait. Diesel wasn't in that one.
Yeah, you're right.
Wuda!
He was in Good Will Hunting, apparently, but I don't remember him in that.
Might have been, like, Bar Fighter number 4.
Right, yeah. Anyway, you know who else is in this movie? Is Keith David. And I wrote this,
yeah.
I in my notes, I have Keith
second appearance.
David is in this. But
his second appearance on the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Yeah, and many number of appearances on notjustnewmovies.com, because he was in a movie called They Live. With what was that guy's name? Roddy Piper. Yes.
Yeah.
Roddy Piper. One of the two, a wrestler, was in a John.
You've got all the answers, but he keeps switching around the questions.
It was a John Carpenter movie. But anyway, yeah, I was just kind of taken aback, and then as soon as I realized it was him, I was like, oh, all right. Well, of course he would be in a movie like this. That's kind of, this is Keith David's wheelhouse. His movies like this, you know, short, kind of
voice.
To the point, relatively low-budget action type of movies. I feel like that's where he kind of does his best work. But
yeah, and if for the uninformed, he was also in Behind Enemy Lines, Columbia, episode 49 of the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Yes.
And in a myriad of military, possibly Marines. I think it was the Marines, wasn't it?
I think so.
In, or with the Navy.
Navy, accelerate your life. That's his catchphrase.
Okay.
Yeah.
That Isaac Asimov story, I found the information to you. You got time for me to read it?
Yeah, please.
All right. Isaac Asimov, famous author. In 1941, he published his 32nd story, Nightfall, which has been described as one of the most famous science fiction stories of all time, end quote. In 1968, the Science Fiction Writers of America voted Nightfall the best science fiction story ever written. In his short story collection, Nightfall and Other Stories, Asimov wrote, "The writing of Nightfall was a watershed in my professional career. It was suddenly taken seriously, and the world of science fiction became aware that I existed. After the years passed, in fact, it became evident that I had written a classic," quote-unquote. Nightfall is an archetypal example of social science fiction, a term coined by Asimov to describe a new trend in the 1940s, led by authors including Asimov and Heinlein, away from gadgets and space opera and towards speculation about the human condition.
Yep.
Now, what happens in Nightfall, and I'm going off of pure, you know, memory. Mm-hmm. There is this city or this civilization that on a planet that has like multiple suns.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I don't know, like six suns. And for some reason, there's this like Armageddon-esque thing that's coming along that's being pushed by certain religions. And like the lawyers and the logics are fighting. They're saying this isn't going to happen. And the scientists are saying, yeah, it is going to happen, but I think we can work through it. And there's like this bedlam that occurs in this civilization, because what happens is this, like, once every 2,000 years or whatever the time span is, the planets align and the planet goes dark.
Yeah.
So like on our planet, Earth, if you're unfamiliar, like we have a sun during the day and then it goes away at night. So we're used to night and day, like darkness and light.
Thank
but
you.
These people, like, the night never comes. The sun is always out for them.
Yeah.
And they are like terror stricken to the point where they are immobile, unthinking.
Yeah, as anyone that, would that be they, if you don't
yeah,
see
that
the,
because
if you don't,
they
you,
have no need for light, like artificial light. They have no need to invent light because light has always been there.
Yeah.
And these scientists, like the whole story is these scientists looking at all these different points of view, and they're like, the logics don't believe us. The religious people are going nuts. They think it's the end of the world. But like, if we sit down and think about this for a second, we could come across the idea of inventing our own light.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, at the end, the darkness comes and like they just burn everything to the ground. Like the fire of them going mad creates a light.
Yeah.
And if they had just sat down for a second and realized, you know,
yeah,
actually thought about their situation, they could have prevented. Like no one knew how long the night would last. Like some were saying it would last like a couple hours. Some would say forever. Like they didn't sit and think about it.
See, what you just described sounds like a much more interesting movie than Pitch Black turned out to be. Would you agree or no?
Well, yeah. Well, I think with that science fiction theme behind Pitch Black, I think the movie did a fairly cool take on it. Like
yeah.
It wasn't the best possible take, I'd say, because obviously a whole civilization at risk would be a little more epic. But like it's kind of like the good points I found in The Mist. If you go back and listen to our thoughts on The Mist, like, you know, yeah, it was kind of a shitty movie, but it also kind of brought about these social groups that are formed within society that deal with situations differently just because either they were brought up differently or
sure.
They think differently or whatever. And with such a small cast in Pitch Black, I think they, you know, they knew about those themes and they knew about those groups, but, you know, it's an action adventure, so they can't get too deep or they're going to lose their core audience.
Right. Yeah. With that in mind, I agree with all of those things that you just said. I think they did a good job of kind of diversifying the cast enough to
yeah.
make them easily identifiable to those different social groups, you know?
Right.
And I don't know. I guess I just – with the whole thing with the aliens and stuff,
yeah,
it kind of – it's like a Tremors type of thing, you know, where instead of you touching the ground, it's they come out at night type of deal.
Right.
And it just, the whole thing just kind of seemed a little cheap to me. I don't know really a better way to describe it than that. I think the effects were okay. Like some of those aliens looked, you know, CG sometimes, and then other times they looked more like claymation. I don't know if you caught that vibe at all.
No claymation catches.
Okay. I just think like they. It does a good job of kind of unifying everybody, like to get to a certain place or to kind of, you know, accomplish one goal instead of just freaking out about the light and stuff. But
right.
It just, I don't know, the movie just, it couldn't sustain my interest.
Yeah, I mean, there's that fine line, especially when you have like a creature feature where
mm-hmm.
you want to use the suspense of not seeing the monster or whatever. But then if you build it up for the entire movie and then reveal it, it's like you kind of opening yourself up for a letdown when the monster doesn't live up to like the suspenseful epicness that the movie had built it up to.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, for me it wasn't necessarily that the aliens didn't really live up to it, because like, crap, I fell asleep near the end, but I did stay awake long enough to realize that like, crap goes crazy at the end of this movie. There's freaking aliens everywhere. Like, it's not like a disappointing reveal of the alien, kind of like in Signs that we talked about at one point in this podcast. So, you know, it's something like just the entire concept, like the execution of the movie, I guess, didn't really do it for me near the end. You know, they did a good job, I guess, of building the tension and stuff, but just the way that it all came together was just kind of like, I don't know. It seemed a little predictable and not as exciting, maybe, as a sci-fi action type of thing could have. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought the ending was kind of still up in the air, even towards the end. Like, I was still kind of, because I hadn't seen it before, so I was like, man, is she gonna leave, or are they going back, or is he gonna leave, or
And I should take that back, because I did not see the and again, as you mentioned, we're wildly way past spoiler territory here, but the main girl, the captain, gets taken and killed in like the last 2 minutes of the movie, and I did not see that coming. I was like, holy crap, all right, that was actually pretty sweet.
Another sweet shot was when they were walking, like they had just started walking from the camp to the ship, and like the camera panned out and you could see the aliens just kind of hovering around the circle of light that they were creating, like just being to attack. I have some notes if you want to roll through them.
Yeah, one other thing while you're talking about cool shots, there was two that I had written down that I wanted to mention while we're still kind of in this topic. There's a scene when they're kind of like walking across a camp or something, and it's like this fish-eyed shot, and you can see all three suns of the planet at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's little, like, that was really cool, I thought. There's also one shot of a snap zoom to Riddick in a lawn chair, basically, after it's shot. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that was pretty funny, actually.
He's just like chilling out up there, like totally away from the situation. I was cracking up at that one, but what is some of your notes?
Another good shot was when the sun disappeared, like the last moment the sun was shining. That was pretty sweet. My first note was from the very beginning when the ship was being destroyed in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen the ship, it's basically the cabin and then like a skyscraper-esque storage unit and then like the thrusters. So I was like, maybe you wouldn't have a problem had you made an aerodynamically sound spaceship.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe it wouldn't break up instantly when it tried to enter the planet's atmosphere.
Right.
They were trying to find water, so thinking a little outside the box, I was like, come on, people, different planet, different kinds of water, maybe poison. Probably don't drink water.
Okay.
Weapon of choice: a scythe. Someone was using a scythe at one point, and I was just kind of like, really? Really?
Yeah.
The
weapon, since you mentioned that, one thing that I had written down was that all the blades looked plastic, and like the gun, at one point Vin Diesel is carrying, or I guess it's not Michael Rapaport, but Cole Hauser's character is got the shotgun to Vin Diesel's face, basically, and he's like, remember this moment. And then Vin Diesel kind of gets the better of him, and Riddick grabs the shotgun and like puts it up to his face, and he's like, remember this moment. But
that goes on for 20 minutes, them just switching guns back and forth and pointing in each other's face.
That they might as well have done that, because that's the equivalent of,
remember this moment. No, you remember this moment.
I feel like there's a good parody in there somewhere, but
back from like Mad TV circa 1999.
Right, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. It's such
a very time sensitive skit.
It's such a specific reference that nobody would get.
It should definitely be like a cold open on this season's Saturday Night Live. See how many people pick up on it. Hey, that's a scene from Pitch Black. Nicely done. This show's going off the air.
You remember this moment live from New York. It's Saturday night.
Another note I put, strangely attracted to Jack. Okay, good. She's a girl.
the kid. Oh, man. That reveal made no sense, didn't it? Like,
yeah, no, it really didn't. It was girl or boy, it didn't matter.
No, it didn't. It didn't serve to kind of move the story forward. It just seemed like something that they were like, oh, let's do this, like, just because, just to confuse people. It didn't really have, like, an engine behind it that seemed to be steering any sort of, like, character change or development or anything. It was just kind of like, random thing now, go.
Yeah, pretty useless, Jack. And then finally, at one point, Vin Diesel / Riddick shoots the alien through the stomach or something, and it falls to the ground, clearly dead, and he still snaps the neck of the alien. Like, that's just, like, total badass in action movies. Like, clearly this thing is not going to move again, but just snapping the neck for good measure.
Oh, man.
I think something you got to do to inflict fear in everyone around you.
I was asleep for that part. That sounds really cool.
Too bad. No, it just kind of falls to the ground, and he takes, like, the huge, like, hammerhead shark skull and just snaps it. So one of the stupid things is, like, he finds its blind spot, which just so happens to be right in front of its face.
Yeah.
So did you see the parts where he'd, like, get up right in front of it and, like, dance with it?
Yeah, I did see that.
So because he, for some reason, he put two bones near its eye sockets and was like, blind spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of a weak story. Story, whatever that part of the story is.
Yeah.
Angle.
A story beat, maybe, I don't know.
No, it's like the part of the story that changes something.
The climax.
Like it's not a twist. No, it's like a.
I don't know.
A story hook, maybe? Something like that.
Sure. One thing that I did like was the very end, how after the main Rada Mitchell's character,
Fry.
The main character, Captain character, gets taken away, Riddick is the one who ends up flying the ship out, and I thought that was kind of a cool little setup and payoff, because they made a mention of him being, like, a really good pilot or something earlier in the movie. So I was like, you know, that also lends itself really easy to predictability, obviously, because if they're talking about that, it's like, why wouldn't you expect that he's going to be the one to fly out at the very end? But whatever. I thought that was all right. So I guess
no Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to lead into that. So obviously there is another movie in this kind of Riddick series, if you will, and it's called The Chronicles of Riddick. And
yeah, the Riddickverse.
The Riddickverse. This came out in 2004, and as you mentioned, stars Dame Judi Dench, along with Carl Urban, Tandy Newton, and, of course, Vin Diesel. This one was also directed by David Tuohy, so you know it has that kind of same brand, I guess. It's not just somebody else taking up the reins or whatnot. Do you plan on watching Chronicles of Riddick after seeing Pitch Black?
I bought it on DVD, so hell yeah.
Okay, all right. I forgot all about that, so I guess you would.
There's a third movie, isn't there? Like an animated movie or something?
You know, it's something.
Oh, I think it's called Pitch Chronicle or something like that.
Apparently, it's. Hang on, let me look this up.
The Pitch Black Chronicles of Riddick.
It says in 2000, a prequel to Pitch Black was released, named Into Pitch Black, which was supposed to be a documentary movie. The Chronicles.
I think that's on my DVD. I think.
Okay.
I think that's on it. No, I think there's like an anime, like the Animatrix.
Well, I'm looking now. It says The Chronicles of Riddick: Escape from Butcher Bay, a game for the Xbox and PC, was also released in 2004. A remake of Butcher Bay, including a new campaign, was released in April 2009 under the title Chronicles of Riddick: Assault on Dark Athena. So I think there's game tie-ins, but not necessarily an animated thing. And then I know right now, as of, you know, circa 2011, Vin Diesel is actually planning on doing a third Riddick movie, and David Tuohy is also kind of attached to that as well. So,
more ancient Carthaginian for Diesel, huh?
Right, that whole Hannibal project he was working on seemed to fall by the wayside, but I'm not sure what the status is of this third Riddick movie. As of right now, which, I mean, we're recording this on August 8th of 2011, so who knows? Like, maybe by the end of the month or even by the end of the year or something, this could be greenlit and we could see this in theaters, you know, as early as next year. Who knows? But
you heard it here first at the Not Just New Movies podcast.
I guess the movie... Because what do you know about Chronicles of Riddick, Tyler? What do you know about that movie?
Basically, it's Vin Diesel in space, and Dame Judi Dench is like a 70-story tall hologram at one point. Possibly.
Is it a prequel or is it a sequel? Because I'm still unclear.
I have no idea.
Okay, all right.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, actually, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now, and it says that.
Don't spoil it for me.
I'm not. It just says that Keith David reprises his role. So I think I'm kind of sold at that point.
The Navy. Motivate yourself.
So, yeah, I guess I'll probably end up watching this at some point.
Accelerate your life.
I don't think it's going to be great, but, you know, whatever. I'll jump in.
That was the big budget return of Riddick.
That movie had a $105 million budget, so it was way bigger than Pitch Black, but
yeah, because I remember it coming out, and then like the Chronicles of Riddick. I was like, how can it be Chronicle? Like, there's only one movie. Then I don't know, 2009 came along, and I was like, oh, Pitch Black had Riddick in it.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, maybe both of us can check that out at some point and talk about it in like a media consume section or something.
Yeah, and then we can watch Trancers 3, right?
Oh, Trancers, man, that's a
legacy.
An old reference for fans of the podcast.
It's a good movie. I'm not gonna lie.
Trancers,
Trancers,
and
now that's some classic science fiction right there.
You know that there's like, I think at least 3 or 4 Doll Man movies too, right?
Yeah, there's Doll Man 1 and then Doll Man versus the Puppet Master.
Right, yeah.
And Doll Man versus Trancers, maybe? I don't know.
Man, yeah. That's,
Doll Man versus Indiana Jones versus Terminator versus RoboCop.
That sounds awful.
Spin-off comic book.
All of those things sound terrible.
Gary Busey reprises his role as the Rocket.
That's from Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, right. But in this, he actually has a rocket as his left hand and shoots baseballs.
All right, we've clearly gone off the rails here, so let's go ahead and just do some concluding thoughts on Pitch Black. So, Tyler, let's start with you.
If you love Asimov-based diesel vehicles, then Pitch Black is the movie for you. I'd watch it if it's on Instant Watch. I wouldn't go, like me, go out and buy the DVD or anything, but
yeah,
you probably get it if you like science fiction.
It's
a solid science fiction movie, let's say that.
Yeah, it's a little
bit of horror.
Yeah, it's a really kind of low budget, and it feels like a low budget sci-fi horror thing. It's got some cool stuff in it, but I don't know. I feel like this whole thing has been done so many times and so much better than this. Movies like Event Horizon, even, I feel like kind of capture all of the same genre mixtures and stuff and just do it a little bit better. If you are a Vin Diesel fan, I assume you've seen this already, because what else could you possibly be a
Vin Diesel fan? Seen it 600 times, you got a problem with that?
A Vin Diesel for, aside from the Fast and Furious franchise, but...
And the Pacifier franchise.
Franchise, oh no.
It's way better than Lawrence of Arabia, let's just say that.
As far as
desert-themed movies.
I'm just...
Lawrence of Arabia was boring.
It was boring, but I also fell asleep in Pitch Black, so I can't necessarily say that it was that much better. I
fell asleep during a lot of a Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
I can't rag on Lawrence of Arabia, that was a different time.
Yeah, different stuff.
Definitely didn't have Vin Diesel back then.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
All right.
Or else... reviewing the classic Jack Lemmon Pitch Black.
All right, well, let's go ahead and rev up the old Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week.
Yeah, sure, no problem. All right, well, the old printer paper's popping out. We got The Usual Suspects, directed by world-famous Bryan Singer, starring...
Kevin Spacey.
Help me out here, buddy. Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Pollak.
Kevin Pollak.
Harvey Keitel is not
Harvey
in it.
Harvey Keitel's nowhere near this movie, I'm sorry.
Stephen Baldwin, Benicio del Toro.
Wait, is it really Stephen Baldwin?
It is, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Thought it was a legitimate Baldwin.
Yeah, no, we'll see.
Luke Baldwin plays his brother Alec Baldwin in a cult classic Usual Suspects.
Yeah, so that's available on Netflix Watch Instantly, so if you guys want to check that out and watch it along with us, you can do that. If you get a chance to see the movie, let us know what you think of it. You can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. You can also subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes.
Leave Definitely, us always free.
Yeah, leave us a review. You should. It would be great.
We're
on Facebook. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. You can, I guess, speak to Tyler directly through that if you care to do something like that. We actually have, looks like, a couple new followers this week. Yeah. So at TMR Bad Seeds and at Paul.
I think that's a band. Check them out.
Okay. Tomorrow's Bad Seeds, looks like. And at Paul W.R. Blanchard. So thanks for the follows there.
It's a Los Angeles agent of some kind.
Okay. All right.
I troll our followers, by the way.
Good. As you should. So
if you don't want to be trolled by the Not Just New Movies podcast, I suggest following us and then not following us.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
So that we can read that you're following us on the air. Makes us
awesome. Okay.
Ben, you want to enter the old meditation garden? Maybe read a couple parchments of some haikus that we've prepared for the Pitch Black.
Yeah, that's right. I guess people who are unaware, who are just joining us for the first time, may not know that August has been deemed by Tyler Poetry Month here at the Not Just New Movies podcast. So
we need to get our nails dirty in some creative writing, and I'm glad you've joined me here in the Zen Garden to share your feelings through the written word.
I've got two haikus prepared, so let's go ahead and hit that music.
Meditation music. All right. Well, for those of you that are, here solely for the creative writing portion of the program, a haiku is a Japanese poem that is characterized by three qualities. It has the essence of a haiku is cutting, or kiru. That's often represented by two images or ideas with a cutting word between the two. I don't know how successful we were in achieving that. Sometimes a verbal punctuation, not just a period, but maybe a word, the way you say it, can be that cutting part of the haiku.
Yeah, it's all in the delivery, I think.
Yeah. The second quality is traditional haikus consist of 17 on, or what we would call syllables, although that's a common misconception. A syllable isn't an on, like it's different in Japan than it is in the West.
Mm-hmm.
It is often stated that haikus have 17 syllables, 5-7-5, but syllables are not the on of like the original haiku definition.
Wow, you're getting really into this.
This is what they've come here for, the poetry fans. And finally, the third quality of a haiku is that it has a kigo, or a seasonal reference, usually drawn from an excessive but defined list of seasonal words, like winter, I guess, some type of nature themed word.
Okay.
Although haikus don't have to be nature themed,
yeah,
they can be.
Okay. All right. So, how many do you have prepared?
I have three.
Okay. All right. So I've got two.
Let's battle. You read yours, I'll read mine. You read yours, I'll read mine, and then we'll have an extra one.
Well, why don't you do yours, and then I'll do mine, and then you do yours, and then I'll do mine, and then you'll finish it off.
Okay. Wow, works a lot better.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, it's kind of weird that we have five haikus and the syllables go 5-7-5.
Oh, it is.
Meta. Got a guess that could have written two, so we would have had. Okay. All right. This first haiku is entitled Beware. Pitch black is most cool. Creatures from the black rock pool. Danger around you.
Okay.
Clink, 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 clink.
Nice. Yeah. Are those like beatniks, like snapping
their claws? No, I'm thinking more of like the Chinese like sticks that they hand, that they like a kabuki almost.
Okay, all right.
Sorry. Into this stuff.
Both of mine are untitled, so I'm sorry.
That's
about
fine.
That, but
untitled, untitled haiku one.
Yeah, here we go. All right, are you ready? Ah, the diesel, how it burns in the moonlight. It's just a sunburn.
Clink, 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 clink. Well done, well done.
Yeah, see, you think that I'm talking about diesel gas, and then
right.
With it's just a sunburn, you realize, oh, you're talking actually about Vin Diesel. But
yeah. Very deep, my friend, very deep.
Indeed.
All right, this next one that I have is entitled Caution, Fries May Be Hot. Be captain or not, Fry is so totally hot, Beast gone and got that.
Clink, 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 clink. Yeah, that was awesome. That might be the winner here.
More.
All right, mine. I'm gonna try to come up with a title for this.
Right off the top of your head, right
now. How about Riddick's Sight?
Nice.
All right, here we go. Blinded by light, revved up like a deuce, Night Runner.
All right, I dug it.
All right.
That last part had three syllables.
Yeah, I know. I don't know the real rules.
It's all about the meaning behind the poem. Structure be damned.
Yeah.
I like how you went with the Manfred Mann and the Earth Band reference.
Yep.
But I think that song was written by Bruce Springsteen. I don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah, that was. Educating America is what we're all about. That and poetry.
There we go. Clink, 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 clink. This last one I have prepared, simply titled Goggles.
Okay.
Put them on with ease. Can see farther than you would. Shipwreck would be proud.
Okay.
Clink, yeah.
Clink, clink, clink.
Clink, clink, clink. Shipwreck, of course, I'm referring to the aquatic-themed G.I. Joe, who... Okay. I would assume would always wear goggles when you're underwater.
I figured that had some sort of tie-in to another franchise. Yeah. I was waiting for your
I wanted to do Scuba Steve, but I thought that was an actual toy, but that's just from Big Daddy.
Yeah, too many syllables in that one, too. That would have been...
Well, I would have taken out wood and put Scuba Steve Be Proud.
Okay.
That was the original draft.
That's an alternate version.
Yeah.
Good
stuff. All right. Well done, Ben. I'm glad you came up to the plate on this one.
Yeah. We'll see how long that ends up lasting.
I think we're gonna return to the meditation garden next week with a limerick.
Ooh.
Some limericks. So read up on what limericks are.
Okay.
Kind of the structure of a limerick. I believe there's some type of scatological theme that are.
Okay. I will.
I'm not really sure. I'm gonna have to go back and reread. But send in your limerick. Send in your haiku. Send in any poetry you've come up with if you're a fan of this little. August poetry nights reading, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's wrap up the character name game really quickly before we move on into Know Your Specs.
Yeah.
Pepper Brooks, sounds like you have a pretty good idea of what...
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
Pepper Brooks. Would this be... Pepper Potts is the Iron Man lady.
That is correct. So it's not that.
Is the movie that came out this week Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
It's not.
Oh.
It's the other one.
The other one?
It's the change-up.
Oh, Pepper Brooks. Okay, I think I know this now.
Okay.
Pepper Brooks was Apatow's wife in some movie?
Nope.
No?
No.
No, was it possibly Olivia Wilde character?
Nope, it's one of the dudes.
Oh, Pepper Brooks. Was it?
It's not Ryan Reynolds.
Okay, then it's definitely that other guy. I can think of as like Michael Bluth.
Yep, Jason Bateman.
Jason, I would have got there. That's Jason Bateman's character in Extract.
No.
It was Jason Bateman's character in Couples Retreat.
Nope. This is a much more popular movie than either of those.
Okay. Arrested Development the movie isn't a movie yet, Ben.
No. It's one of those things that you're like, oh yeah, Jason Bateman was in that. He's not like a main character at all.
The Royal Tannenbaums.
No. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, unless you have a final Hail Mary guess.
You want to give me a year?
2004. The summer of 2004, right alongside Anchorman.
Oh, Starsky and Hutch.
Oh, actually.
No,
the other one.
He was Vince Diesel's sidekick in that.
The other big.
Was he in Dodgeball?
Comedy. Yes, Pepper. The F&A Cotton, that whole.
Oh.
The announcers of the Dodgeball championship.
Right.
Yeah.
Ocho. The Ocho.
Indeed.
Well done. Nicely done. Man, okay. I really thought for sure it was Starsky and Hutch because he was in that too. Yeah, man, that was a good year for movies.
It was. It was great.
Man, we should do 2004 as a themed month, like, and we'll just go back, watch those three plus another one.
That would be pretty awesome.
Dodgeball, Starsky and Hutch. Like, that basically got me back into movies as a thing.
Yeah.
When I saw Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah.
Which, if you don't know, Ben and I, we dressed up as Starsky and Hutch the day that movie was released.
We did. I don't know why, but we did.
We did. I had a leather jacket. Ben had a Hawaiian shirt.
And we had sunglasses on.
AV. And I had a phone, and I called him at 7 a.m. Like, today's Starsky and Hutch day, brother.
All right, so let's jump into, from random memories of us in high school, on to Know Your Specs, or Up Your Specs, as you...
Up Your Specs. You remember this moment.
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome to Up Your Specs, a game where confidence can win or ruin the day. I'm tired of explaining the rules, so let's just move on to the categories.
Yeah,
Ben. Yeah, I think you've caught on by now. Ben, of the three categories that we usually go over, year, director, or star, this week we don't have any choices. I've just picked three movies and put them into the three categories. So which one do you think you're more confident in guessing the answer to, year, director, or star?
Let's go with director, man. I always feel confident with director.
Director. I picked some hard ones this week.
Oof.
Now you've been guessing mine. Who directed 2010's MacGruber?
Oh, man.
I can sing the theme song if you...
It's the dude from the Lonely Island videos. I don't remember exactly what his name is. It's something really weird. I think it starts with an E. There should be a vowel in there somewhere, but there's not. Go ahead and tell me what it is. I don't remember.
The director was Jorma Taccone.
Jorma. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Wow, I can't believe you were getting close to that.
Yeah.
MacGruber. Did you ever check out MacGruber?
I have not seen it, no.
That is worth the watch. And I went and saw that in theaters, and it was highly entertaining.
Okay.
Like, no doubt. Like, it's not even like a Tyler pick. It's
right.
Legitimately funny.
Okay.
Val Kilmer, Stephanie, or no, who am I thinking of? I wanted to say Stephanie Weir, but that's someone from Mad TV.
If it hits instant,
The famous SNL cast member that was in Bridesmaids.
Oh, Kristen Wiig?
Yeah, Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph.
Okay.
Powers Booth.
Yeah.
Well worth the rental.
Okay.
So of the two remaining categories, nice job. That was a good, you almost got it. The last two remaining categories, year and star, I can almost guarantee you that you may not be able to guess one of these.
Okay, let's go with star.
Okay. Who was the top billed in 1993's The Sandlot?
Oh, no.
Spoiler alert, it's not James Earl Jones.
Oh, man. That is tough.
Ew. I'll rock you on this episode.
It's not Dennis Leary, either. I'm pretty sure he played the dad, yeah.
Damn kids, quit playing over there! That Sandlot.
Benny the Jet Rodriguez. Now, he wouldn't even be top billed. I honestly, you got me on that one. I really don't know.
Tom Query.
Comp?
Tom Query.
Oh, Tom Query, okay. Tom
Query, who went on to do I Have No Idea.
I'm going to look him up right now.
Yeah, go ahead. We got all the time in the world.
How do you spell weary?
Guiry, G-U-I-R-E, oh. Or G-U-I-R-Y, sorry.
Oh, okay. He was in Mystic River, apparently.
Oh, he might have played a dead body. he actually grew up to be Tim Robbins. Wait, he was in that, right?
He was in Black Hawk Down as well. He was in U-571.
Oh, I really dig that movie.
All right, let's keep going. Let's go to year.
The final category is, of course, year. And which year did the film Nutty Professor 2, The Clumps, hit theaters and our hearts?
Oh, God. How about 2001? Oh, the year 2000.
No, I got you right in time. It was the year 2000.
Oh, man.
You said 2000, and then I said correct.
Right, yeah.
Like the 16th syllable.
Yeah, all right.
Nutty Professor 2 starring Eddie Murphy and I think Janet Jackson.
That sounds right.
And then, of course, like the farts or whatever.
The clumps.
The fake trailer in Tropic Thunder when Jack Black plays like the farts or something. All right, and that was another edition of Up Your Specs. Know Your Specs. Nice job, Ben.
Thanks. I mean, it wasn't a really a nice job.
I rocked your world.
I didn't get any of them. But yeah, good questions. Especially
okay.
Like, that Sandlot thing. That's a good one. Nobody's ever going to get that.
The harder it gets that you don't, like the harder ones that you don't get means it's going to return to like a sense of medium somewhere.
Yeah. It'll all balance out. So let's go back and forth and tell people where they can track us down on the internet this week. So Tyler, let's start with you.
Yeah. You know, Solar Sentinel and the ever looming end to Destageddon.
And I just realized I don't know if we've actually ever spelled out Destageddon for people. You want to spell that?
Spelled exactly how it sounds. Destination Armageddon or Desti, D-E-S-T-I, Geddon, G-E-D-D-O-N, .blogspot.com. It's going to fall off my places you can find me in a couple weeks. Yeah.
That's going to be a sad day.
Yeah. Well, although it'll still be there somewhere in cyberspace.
Right.
Thankfully. Its sun won't be going out anytime soon, I can tell you that much.
Indeed. All right, well, you guys can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing sporadically at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast, and you can hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. Music for this show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They are also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. As Tyler mentioned, we will be watching The Usual Suspects next week. It's available on Netflix Instant. Feel free. Shoot us an email. Leave us a voicemail. Let us know what you think of it. And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you guys next week. Money that